Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello. I am so pleased that we're going to have a chance to talk about a subject that all of us enjoy. But, you know, if you still are carrying those few extra pounds from all the holidays that we have had since Christmas that keep popping up every single month, and you have all of these delicious yum-yum things that people prepare and fix, and you go, oh, my goodness, daylight savings time, I'm in a situation, how in the world am I ever going to lose whatever? Does that sound sort of familiar? Well, gals, listen up, because I think you're going to find that our conversation is going to be a very insightful one. Why? It's not just about food. It's about how we use food sometimes in ways that, well, that handicap us. And my guest is Sue Van Raes. Her delightful book, and I say delightful because I absolutely love the cover, it's called Food and Freedom, Discover Your Personal Recipe to Eat, Think, and Live Well. Sue Raes, I wanted to say this is such a wonderful book. You've covered so many different aspects of human nature. You're a nutritionist. You are what you call yourself a food psychology specialist, a psycho-spiritual practitioner. You work with people in your own area of Boulder, Colorado. You do remote work. You do retreats. Now, these retreats are generally for women, but Sue, would this book be very good also for a guy to read as well? And welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here with you. And thank you for all of the wonderful ways you've introduced my brand new book. There's a lot of universals within Food and Freedom that are for all people. And there are some specific parts around eating with our menstrual cycle and being in tune with some of the hormonal fluctuations that women have that are a little bit more specific to women. But I surely think that anybody could pull many important and useful tenets from this book around how to improve their relationship to food, how to feel more satiated, how to learn to stay in biochemical balance, and really how to have food working for us rather than against us.
I'm with you on that. I was intrigued with how you address metabolic patternings of a body. Anybody should know that there's a major difference between the way the male physique metabolizes foods, utilizes them, to the female. And I am like one of the many millions of women that has always worked with the a minute on my lips and it's 45 years on the hips. You know, it's just absolutely, totally irritating. But you address the physiological chemistry of a person. And this is something that I think is very important. And I've always said my body is such an efficient machine that anything it doesn't need, it's going to stockpile. And I think I may have that to thank some European ancestors that I've got. I've got to do ancestry.com or 123, what's its name? And because it's really fascinating to me how so many people are different. I mean, some people could eat, you know, high carbs and they're so thin, it's disgusting. And you go, how come you can have that? But if I have four or five pieces of bread, I end up looking like a chipmunk with its cheeks stuffed with nuts. So what goes on here? Why is this so important to have the metabolic patterning evaluated?
It's such an important question. We are taught so often in our society to follow one-way approaches to almost everything. And when we start to look at our lineage, how our metabolisms are set up from our genetics, from our constitutions, from so many different perspectives that weave together to make us unique, it only would make sense that our metabolisms are unique. And so we've probably all experienced a situation where we watch one person doing one thing and that might work really well for them, and then we try it and it doesn't work as well for us. And it might even be our own sister or our own mother. But because we have a unique imprint within our metabolisms and within our biochemistry, we have to uncover what works best for us to truly find that stable biochemistry, blood sugar, which is biochemistry and blood sugar, so that we can support our metabolic health in the ways in which our unique bodies need. When we uncover that, it's literally like uncovering a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow, because we can finally trust how to feed our bodies in the most well and nourishing way that will support all the different systems of our body. And so when I started including that in my work, probably over 15 years ago now, it really started to, I saw so much more rapid healing. I saw people feeling much more satiated, much more confident about how they were building a plate or a meal, and really just feeling like they were coming back into balance and building the capacity for self-trust because they knew what their bodies needed. And it's so important to understand how we work as individuals rather than looking for blanket approaches that are said to work for everyone, when truly we could just see, just by looking at how unique we all are, how important it is to really uncover our uniqueness within our metabolic health and profile.
I really appreciated how you bring out, and this is for this comment that I'm going to make, I believe is relative to men, because I know of someone whose husband, just no matter how much he ate, he was never full. He never knew what fullness was, and they discovered that it was a lack of a hormone. And please correct me if I mispronounce it, ghrelin, G-H-R-E-L-I-N, and then also leptin, L-E-P-T-I-N. Mm-hmm. Tell us about these two hormones.
Our hunger and fullness hormones, they're very important in how our body signals and cues us with hunger and fullness. So ghrelin is our hunger hormone. And for most of us, as we can all attest to, when we get hungry, true body hunger, we experience a little grumble in our stomach. We experience, you know, some of those kind of hunger pangs. We might start to notice like that we're thinking about food a lot. We might start to notice that we get a little drop in our energy. We might start to notice that we get a little bit like brain fog takes over if we're working on a work project or something like that. Ghrelin cues us when we are meant to eat food and replenish. And then leptin is our satiation hormone, and leptin comes in and starts to tell us when we've had enough. Leptin works best when we have blood sugar stability. Leptin works best when we're eating mostly natural foods. And leptin is another aspect, kind of the partner with ghrelin, that we can turn to start to trust our own body's cues towards hunger and fullness. So there's some really interesting science around ghrelin and leptin, because they do fluctuate with certain influences. For example, they fluctuate with hormonal ups and downs as women. They also fluctuate with stress hormones. They also fluctuate with the quality of sleep that we're getting. And when we start to understand the impact that our lifestyle has on ghrelin and leptin in subtle ways most of the time, and occasionally in bigger ways, we can then start to understand our bodies a little bit more, with a little bit more information and with a little bit more real-time experience of listening and trusting those cues. So really, they're the foundation of so much of our hunger and fullness, and can become a really wonderful anchor in listening to our bodies.
I was introduced to a new word in your book, interoception. And apparently there was someone in 1906, a Nobel laureate, Charles Scott Sherrington, introduced this term along with a couple of others. What was this all about?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, you know, we hear about some of the other words that are often related to interoception, such as proprioception, which is how we are spatially aware outside of our bodies. Interoception is very similar, except for it's our internal awareness, how we are feeling with how we are navigating or recognizing our internal bodily cues or sensations. And as we know, when we live in a very fast-paced, to-do-oriented society, we tend to be rushing through our days and not really paying so much attention to our bodily cues and sensations. But as we start to bring interoception, or what's often even another kind of more common term for interoception is also mind-body connection, when we start to bring that a little bit more front and center in our focus, and we learn to strengthen that muscle, we can gain so much information about what we are needing through those inner sensations. And it's very profound to be able to turn inward and trust ourselves around food, but also around other things that these sensations might be cueing, because it is really innate and part of our primal body and brain. And yet we've just been taught to keep ignoring it or overriding it or looking outside of ourselves for the answers instead of looking inside, where all of this really incredible information is available to us.
You have a quote from a man that I just have such a deep appreciation for. He's gone now, Leo Buscaglia. He said, everybody needs a hug. It changes your metabolism. I just love that man. He was just so wonderful and warm, and he left such a fabulous legacy. You had a challenge with food, and you said it started, you know, when you were a kid and with cereals. It started with cereals. And you said wherever you would go, you were like a food absorption machine. You just were just eating. And you had all kinds of challenges, and it sounded like hypoglycemia to me when I was reading about it. And you said that your hunger was rooted in two things, blood sugar imbalance and a unique metabolic profile. And having that hypoglycemic patterning, which I have, that's the reason I was able to recognize it. The metabolic profile, where do you go? Your blood sugar, you can, you know, get the tests on the blood sugar. But what about the metabolic profile? I don't think I've ever heard any doctor, anytime, say, we'll do a test and get your metabolic profile. What is that, and how do you test for it?
That's a really great question. So, yes, there's a very important connection between blood sugar and metabolism. They really are, like, married. And so how we respond to food, how we respond to macronutrients on a cellular level is what determines our metabolic profile. Our metabolisms are happening inside the cell, inside the mitochondria, building energy out of ATP. A lot of us know the term ATP from like high school science. And what's happening is in that metabolic process of building energy in the cell, we require macronutrients. And depending on how fast and efficient our cells are building energy is going to depend on how much of these are the ratios of our macronutrients that are best suited for our cellular metabolism. And so, for example, in my particular case, when I was eating cereal for breakfast, not only was my blood sugar spiking and crashing throughout the day, and starting out with breakfast was really setting me up for like a blood sugar roller coaster, which just left me feeling insatiable, low energy, you know, sometimes tired, various symptoms that come with those spikes and crashes, definitely like very frantic around needing food when we're crashing or when our blood sugar is dipping below a healthy range. But also, when we look at that from a macronutrient perspective, I was pretty much eating only carbohydrates for breakfast. It was cereal, it was fruit, it was maybe some orange juice or some other kind of juice. It was all carbohydrates. And what I discovered as an adult when I learned about my unique metabolism and my metabolic profile is that I was so far on the extreme side of the spectrum for needing high amounts of protein and high quality fat. And I wasn't getting that for most of my younger years, especially for breakfast. I was getting it at other meals, but by then my blood sugar had already been on quite the ride on its roller coaster throughout the day. So I had already felt a lot of negative symptoms just from starting off the morning with those high carb and high sugar meals. So once I started adding in the correct balance for my metabolism, I was able to quickly learn what it felt like to be satiated. And I hadn't felt that in so long on a regular basis. And so it really changed my experience of my energy throughout the day. It shifted my cravings. It helped me sleep better. It shifted so much around like what I was capable of taking care of as a person in the world, just because I was able to have better mind focus and better mental clarity. I was in a better mood. My brain chemistry was better. So everything was working better for me. And it was like I had just found the Holy Grail, because all of a sudden, like, my whole system came into balance. My blood sugar didn't need to crash all the time. And I was in a sustainable, healthy range with my blood sugar, but also my metabolism was working in the way it was supposed to, getting all of the building blocks to build energy, which is really the foundation of everything. So there's a couple different ways to test for this. And originally, we would test with blood and urine. And it was a very thorough test. It came up with wonderful results, but it did take a few hours per person, where we would give people like glucose water on an empty stomach on a 24-hour fast. And they would drink the glucose water, and then we would monitor their blood sugar and their in their urine through their blood and urine throughout the 3 or 4 hours to come, and kind of it created, you know, it's like data for us to work with that we could then work with how to then repair or add in to support their metabolism and getting what it needed. Soon after that, I met a team of doctors, holistic medical doctors in some of my studies, who had found a way through constitutional analysis to create a very similar test, but one that was done online and that came up with, you know, that only took like 30 or 45 minutes to complete. So I went through their whole training and studied a lot more about how metabolisms are unique and all the things we can do to uncover what we need to really feed our bodies in our own unique ways. And then we started comparing the two different tests, the one that looked at blood and urine and the one that looked at the constitutional analysis. And we were getting the same results, which was really comforting and helpful, because it was a lot to have people having to come in for a 4-hour long test.
Mm-hmm.
This was almost 20 years ago. So then I started implementing the new platform into my private practice, and now I have almost every single client go through that that testing, because it is just so profound what we can learn about ourselves and what we can learn about what I can learn about my clients, and help them to really shift their eating in a way that supports those unique ratios of protein, fat, and carbohydrates. And it really is such a game changer.
I
hope that helps.
Yes, I think that does help. You mention in your book, you've got tools for blood sugar balance. You say there are test strips that can be used, a test A1C, and you said that's very standard testing. And of course, then there's the glucose monitor that diabetics typically will use on a regular basis to monitor their sugar levels. So this is all very, very good information. But you also talk about willpower and blood sugar. And I can tell you, I've had those hypoglycemic sugar drops that were so severe that I didn't care what it was. All I knew is that I had to have sugar. I had to have something right away. And there was a doctor that I met, and he was an Asian physician, and he said, "This is something you were born with. You're going to have it all of your life. It's just something you need to know. Be sure you balance your food." And this is something you bring out, having protein. And that is something that I've known for years. But at the time, I had a very serious situation where my vision went black. My sugar had dropped that low. And when I described it to him, and he said, "You're one of the healthiest human beings I've ever met." But he said, "You have this patterning, and it's something genetically that you inherited." So I didn't have any knowledge of it. Nobody around me had ever mentioned anything like that. I'm from Southern California, and he asked me a question. He said, "Were you on a diet?" I said, "Of course." Everybody in Southern California was on a diet. My God, that's what we all did. Because we were all too fat, okay? Which we weren't, but that was the mentality, and it still is in many, many ways. But willpower, you say it's more likely to happen when it's low, when your willpower is next to zero. That's when your blood sugar is really low and it can't feed your brain. And I can testify to that. I can testify to that because that is a personal experience I had many years ago. And I was talking to someone just recently, and they were talking about their significant spouses. It was a husband talking about his wife, and there was a member of the wife's family that said, "What do you do when she gets in these strange moods that she has? She's been this way all of her life." I said, "Oh, it's really simple. I just feed her. FEED. I just feed her." I don't know if she had a weight challenge or not, but he had figured out what to do. Her husband had figured it out. She had low blood sugar. And she had to have something. And protein is the one thing, and also having fat in the diet. And when you look at the mentality that we have had in this country, in the United States, and other countries have picked up on it too, it is something that really is a bad patterning because we've really made food an enemy, not a helpmate, but an enemy. And so what you bring out with the metabolic process is, I think, extraordinarily important because I know
Thank
people
you.
that they're suffering from malnutrition. I know a number of women, especially, that are suffering from malnutrition. And they're always saying, "Well, I'm on a diet here, or I've got this there," or whatever. And it's a sad statement about our culture and our relationship with food.
I 100% agree. We've really gone down a pretty severely tragic rabbit hole when it comes to diet culture and not understanding really from a bigger picture, like the impact of eating too little or not of the right macronutrients and the impact that that has on our long-term health and our metabolism. But you bring up so many important points. So first of all, we share the hypoglycemia. So I totally understand how that can feel in the body when we do go into those really low blood sugar zones. And I myself have a similar symptom that you mentioned with blacking out, which is when I find myself in that low blood sugar zone, which is so rare these days, but it would have to be some pretty unusual circumstances. But every once in a while, I'll notice blurry vision and I'll end up with a blood sugar migraine if I am not careful. And it's really weird when it affects your vision because we don't necessarily, feel like that's a normal relationship to blood sugar. But having talked to so many doctors over the years in my own kind of self-research, and even eye doctors, I've really confirmed that there's a very important relationship between having enough blood sugar to monitor something like our vision.
Mm-hmm.
So that I just think is really interesting. And I did not know what was happening for a long time when that would happen to me early on. But I think what's so interesting that you were sharing is understanding what happens also with our mood. And it does really, you know, the word hangry, which is kind of a, you know, catchphrase that a lot of people use when they notice their blood sugar dropping and they find themselves really grumpy and irritable, you know, it's definitely because our brain chemistry is also mimicking our blood sugar. So we don't have the ability to stay as happy and positive when things are crashing. We start to notice that all these different systems in our body become impacted. And really what's happening is a fight or flight response. And it's so wild because the fight or flight response is going to take over, and that's coming from our primal brain. We go right into our animal brain and we go into survival mode. And that is why we might get irritable. We might get very directive. We also might find ourselves not being able to make conscious choice, because at that moment we're in survival. And our very most important mission is to avoid exactly what you mentioned, which is something similar to a blackout or a diabetic coma, or our brain shutting down because it doesn't have enough blood sugar flowing into it. This is a very important need of the body to stay in a healthy range. And so all systems shut down in a certain way, or at least the ones we don't need. And willpower, although it's a force within us that already is up and down, depending on how well we slept and how much we've done that day and how tired we are and, you know, various other things that kind of come into our experience on a day-to-day basis, willpower is not a steady line. It is a very much an up and down experience. But when you layer blood sugar on top of that, you could see how at this moment we're going to be looking at something more decision-making power and how we're going to go into something that is going to get us the food we need as soon as possible as our number one mission. And even if we've declared that we're not eating this or that, or that we're trying to stay on track with, you know, certain foods that are healthier, when our blood sugar is crashing, we don't have good decision-making power. Our only mission is to get our blood sugar back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And we will do anything at all costs to do that. So it's just not the best time to make decisions. So for one thing, we can have food available to us if we are prepared. I know for me, I don't very often leave the house without a backup plan, even if it's just something easy to carry, like some nuts in my car or in my bag, because I know that if I need something, I want to be able to reach for something that does have good protein and fat in it for me. Because I've seen it so many times with friends and clients and many people in my life, if there's sugar right there, you'll reach for sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is going to bring your blood sugar up fast. It's going to continue the cycle, but it is going to save you in that moment. And that's all your primal brain cares about.
Mm-hmm. You bring up a woman by the name of Caitlin, and she had been, this is how you phrased it, she had been at war with her body ever since she could remember. And I felt such an empathy for her. And she was able to make peace with her body. But I was surprised that she had done something like the potato diet, where it was all nothing but potatoes. And she ended up having some, well, not so pleasant side effects just from eating nothing but potatoes. Now, you listen to the media and there's all this sensational stuff, and we've got so many diet books out there. It's unreal. And she said, you said it didn't make any difference what she did. It just, she was constantly in this state. How did you bring her to a point of harmony and balance so she could be in balance with herself?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So she was doing a lot of drastic things and never finding any kind of relief, because when our minds attach to how we are supposed to look or how we want to look or a number on the scale, it's very easy to just keep lowering that number, as many of us can attest to. What happened with her that was so profound is that my main mission in the beginning, and it really circles back to the first part of our conversation, was she needed to find her way into biochemical balance. She needed to find her way into blood sugar stability, because what would happen is she would also make these dramatic plans to keep the weight off. But then when she would deprive herself of the food she needed, she would also experience things such as a blood sugar crash, because she wasn't getting the food she needed to stay in her blood sugar range. She wasn't getting enough food or the right kind of food. And something like the potato diet was obviously all 100% carbohydrates. She was lacking in protein and fat. She was lacking in a lot of essential nutrients that her body needed to build muscle and to stay strong and all of the other things that we need, that we get from protein and fat. So, long story short, she really worked hard at learning how to eat in a balanced way for her metabolic health. And in that process, there was so much self-correction. She felt satiated. Her brain chemistry was more on her side. So that really loud inner critic naturally quieted a little bit. Not all the way, but when we're really off balance in a metabolic way, our brain chemistry is also out of balance. It's not to say that food can cure mental health issues, but food can 100% support and make those mental health challenges much manageable. And so her inner critic quieted when she brought herself back into metabolic stability and balance. And then she was able to see the benefit through so many different parts of her life, how she was sleeping, how she was feeling more energized, how she was feeling more satiated, how her mind was working better for her. And she was able to learn that if she could keep herself stable throughout the day, that she didn't have these crazy moments of feeling like she had to eat way to excess to kind of balance the pendulum swinging from deprivation to excessive eating. And so the pendulum just kind of found its way to the middle, and she was able to stay much more in balance by just being prepared a little bit better, bringing maybe some extra snacks in case she was going to get really hungry in between work meetings, making sure she had a solid breakfast every day and a really, you know, hearty dinner. And all of these things just started to work with her from biochemistry. And it's amazing how much that impacts even our thinking, even these ways in which we pendulum with our eating. And so it really helped her to find her way into a new paradigm. And it was a very big shift for her, but it was an incredibly important one that really made an impact on her quality of life.
Oh, I can imagine. Now, you have a website, Sue, and that is Boulder, like Boulder, Colorado, but bouldernutrition.com. Your book is Food and Freedom: Discover Your Personal Recipe to Eat, Think, and Live Well. And you've got some wonderful recipes in here. And you also have a number of other aspects that we have not had a chance to discuss. But I really think the metabolic aspect, as well as understanding that food is not our enemy. It is really recognizing what works for us so that we can enjoy good health and really be amazed at how much stamina we can have when we are in that positive positioning and giving up all of the dramatic dynamics that often come with these various food challenges that our culture has taught us to embrace and really becoming acquainted with what our body really, really needs. And there's much more detail in your book. And by the way, I want my listeners to know that a portion of the sales of this book, it's going to be donated to the Hunger Project. I want to thank you, Sue Van Raes. And by the way, I want people to know that it's Vanraes. The last name, Van Raes, Sue Van Raes. I want to thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you so much for having me. What a wonderful conversation, and thank you for bringing so much of your own insight around food to this conversation. What a treat to be with you.
It has been a delight, Sue, and by golly, when you come out with your next book, I hope you'll remember me and send me a copy.
I sure will.
All right.
100%.
Take care.
Thank you so much, Donna.
You are welcome. We're saying goodbye to Sue Van Raes. And just know that, you know, we're all in this experience of life together. And whenever we can learn how we can take care of ourselves in a better way, boy, I'm all for sharing it. Because I, just like so many of you, fell into that mental, what I want to say, programming. And this happened when I was a little girl. So this was something my mother adopted and just about everybody I knew adopted. And boy, it didn't work out well for me until that doctor was able to tell me. He said, I think the only reason, and I was not overweight at all at the time when I spoke with him, he said, the only reason you have erratic eating habits is because your blood sugar is dropping. When he found out I'd been on a diet, which, again, everybody in California seems to be on a diet. It hasn't changed any, to the best of my knowledge. But anyway, he just said, you know, this is what you've got going. So you have to remember that you may need multiple meals during a day. And all depends on your schedule. But remember, this is what you have to pay attention to. And other than that, you're fine. So anyway, passing that along, we're going to take a little bit of a break. And by the way, if you want to give me a call, the number to call into is 253-582-5597. I'll be right back. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio, able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to Mrs. Sebo's Classics. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on the Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Well, we're going to be chatting with Ona Grutz, and this is the title of her book, Everywhere I Look. We're going to be talking about, well, it's really a tragedy, but how she was able to find out about secrets in the family. And this was after a particular situation occurred. It's an amazing story. Then on Wednesday, now remember, Wednesdays are always a doubleheader. We have Warriors for Peace, as it's already been mentioned, from 7 to 8. And then the Donna Sebo Show follows. So we're going to be talking on Warriors for Peace about the Great Flip. Now, this is about American history. How much do you know about the various political parties. And I'm not talking about what's on the news. I'm talking about the actual history and how parties went from one side to the other side and back again and over again. And I had no idea about this historical information. Well, Donald Fraser has put this. He is a historical researcher, and I think you're going to find the conversation quite interesting. Then we are going to be having the audio of my latest television show, which is Mind Power in Everyday Life. I've got two very special guests, and we have Judy Wilkins-Smith as well as Jim Jensen. Both of these people very experienced with some tools that they use to empower them in their lives and how it made a difference. And that is going to be aired, so you'll be able to hear that. And remember, the television show, which was put together recently, that is now up on YouTube and on TCTV, the various channels they have. It's going to be aired on every Tuesday afternoon at 5 o'clock. Then we're going to be talking with Kelly Miller, Love Hacks, and then we're going to be discussing what she discovered with Aspen. Then we're going to end the week on UFO conversations. That's right. Bart Elders is going to be my guest, and we are going to have quite a conversation. And this is actual documented information. Fascinating stuff. So we've got so many things going on. Can you believe it? May 1 is just around the corner, so to speak, with time. And we've got a wonderful lineup coming up in May. So all of this and more, and it is just, well, it's just amazing to me, all of the talented people that we have. Now, if you want to call in and chat with me, 253-582-5597. Now, with the book on food and freedom, but one of the recipes that Sue gives in her book, I thought I would share with you because it's called Golden Milk. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but in Indian, East Indian culture, this is something that is a very common part of their life, golden milk. And she said, you need milk, whatever milk you like. It can be A2 milk, it can be regular milk, it can be skim milk, it can be almond milk, whatever is your pleasure. You take 3 teaspoons of maple syrup. You can use raw honey if you like. 1 teaspoon of ground or fresh grated turmeric. 1 teaspoon of ground or freshly grated ginger. I recommend the freshly grated ginger because it really gives a wonderful taste. And 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon. 1 pinch of sea salt, pinch of black pepper, and the black pepper activates the benefits of the turmeric as well as the cinnamon, and 4 tablespoons of chia seeds. It's amazing what those little tiny seeds can do for the body. It's just great. And what you do, you take all of the ingredients, put it in a small pot, excepting the chia seeds. Don't put those in yet. You bring your milk brew to a boil, reduce it to a simmer. Once you've done that, then you put in the chia seeds. And you simmer it and stir until the chia seeds soften. And that's going to take a whopping 3 minutes, and just serve it warm. Now, she gives an additional note with this in her book, Food and Freedom. Superfood science, she calls it. Turmeric is a potent ingredient that diminishes inflammation, improves mood, and neutralizes free radical damage in the body. There's just so much that we're learning about with food. But her approach is quite an interesting one and a very valid one. And hey, guys, you can use the knowledge yourself. It really is so important that we realize we're all very, very unique, dependent on our genetic legacy. And this is something where I remember doing an interview. Oh, this was a couple of years ago. And it was with a woman. I don't recall the title of the book, but she was a Native American. And she had found that she had certain health issues, and she's a very intelligent woman, highly educated. So she decided she was going to do some research on her Indian background. And she was curious, what did my people eat? What did they bring into their diet? And so she found out about the types of meat. She found out about those vegetables that were typically consumed by the people. And she decided she was going to start eating the way her ancestors did. And it turned her around physically. She said she then wanted to do an experiment because, again, like I said, she was very, very well educated. And she decided she wanted to do a study on people of the like heritage, Native American heritage, that she had. And every single one of them, apparently, that participated in this experiment had a problem with blood sugar. Native Americans do not do well on the American diet, period. They don't do well with alcohol. And the reason being is that the alcohol, for example, is pure sugar. That's why so many alcoholics have malnutrition. They are literally consuming sugar. And they're just not getting any good nutrition. If someone has a good dietary patterning, even if they drink heavily, the body has a better way of working with it. But otherwise, it's just total sugar going in. So what she found, and what all of the people found that participated in her experiment, and they really did a good job of staying true to the course, they didn't end up having diabetes anymore. That wasn't a problem because it didn't exist, and it changed because of the dietary pattern that they followed. So it really is fascinating when you get into that, and what is one person's perfect for their body style to another person is going to be highly toxic. It's really fascinating. So that's why it's good to find out about your genetic heritage. And, you know, why there are certain things that will work for your body very, very well. And I will just share with you that I had no idea that there was more than one vitamin D source. Didn't have any idea about that. I thought it was only fish. Well, I got educated by an Asian physician who advised me that there was a vitamin D supplement that was an animal vitamin D supplement, not a fish supplement. And I was having low vitamin D numbers. Found out that when I started taking the animal form of vitamin D, didn't have a problem with the vitamin D after that. So I share this with you because these are things that I have learned. And this is something that I feel is so important for anyone. I don't care if you're a vegetarian. I don't care what it is, so that you can do the adaptation to your body that is going to serve it the best. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. Well, I don't know about anybody else, but here in the Pacific Northwest, we are positively, thoroughly enjoying all of the golden rays that we've been getting lately. And even though that the air is still cool, it is just absolutely gorgeous. We've got rhodies. We've got all kinds of flowers that are blooming, and the trees are just absolutely spectacular to see. And what happens when you go to any place like Home Depot or any nursery? It's packed with people. People are taking home flowers. I know I was one of them. And it was such a joy to be able to plant oodles of flowers out in the front yard. And I'll never forget one time when I was at a major store where they had all of these fabulous flowers and my cart was just packed with them. And the cashier that was checking me out, she said, "Oh, these are so beautiful." I said, "Yes." She said, "I'd rather spend my money on flowers than food." She said, "It just is so invigorating when you have all of that beauty around you." And that is really true. Well, someone came up with an idea, and I don't know that it would work for you, but I thought it was an interesting touch because it works for them. When you're transporting plants, now it's so easy when you're transporting plants, unless they're in a good holder type that you can keep stable in your vehicle. It's easy if you just got something in a pot for it to fall over, for the dirt to fall out, all of that. That's happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to you. And they, the suggestion was when you go to the nursery or wherever it is you go to get your flowers, don't forget your stepladder. Now, it's not for climbing, but to secure your plant haul. And they said, lay your trunk in your trunk, lay the ladder down in the trunk, and place your top heavy or very fragile plants in the spaces between the rungs to hold them upright. No more spilled soil on the carpet or driving home with the peace lily in your lap. So I just thought I would share that with you because it's not a bad idea. It depends on the size car that you've got. If you've got one of those little itsy-bitsy electric cars, it's going to be in your lap. The lily, believe me, you're not going to have enough space for too much. But even so, think about the ways that you can keep those top-heavy plants or anything like that from falling over. It really does make a difference. Also, someone came up with a concept, and this has to do with your dishwasher. And they said, no matter how you do it, sometimes you have glassware that's got a unique shape to it. And that could be wine glasses, you know, champagne flutes, which are very slender. They don't sit quite right in your upper rack for the wash. And they had this idea, and I thought, this is not bad. Preventing breakage. Take a rubber band, put it around the body of the glass, not the stem, but the body, and then put that rubber band over the rack spokes during a turbulent wash cycle. Keeps them stable. So they'll get washed, they'll stay stable, and they won't crack. They won't be banging up against each other. I thought that was quite interesting. And then this one is about Zoom. And you probably already know it, but I thought I would share it with you anyway. Because if you're like me, you may not always remember certain steps if you're not on Zoom that often. Well, if you're trying to unmute yourself during a work meeting, or let's say you're doing a television show or a video of yourself, and you you end up turning off your camera or accidentally disconnecting from the call that you have on Zoom entirely, no matter which side of Zoom you're on, but you can mute very easily and unmute very easily with a space bar. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is hit the space bar. It'll mute you. And when you're ready to unmute, you push the space bar again. Test it out. Try it. See if it works for you. The suggestion, I think, is a good one. Doesn't hurt at all. There are so many things to learn when you are using computers. And if you're like me, you get comfortable with a certain patterning and you go, oh, that's nice. Okay, now I've got that down. Then somebody comes along, one of those smart programmers, and said, okay, now that you've learned that, now you've got to learn something else. Oh, my goodness. I just think it's something we have to work with. And just be aware, it's one of those things that you're going to find that's going to be a constant change in one way or another. I came across some questions that people were asking an individual that really loves to share their knowledge about pets. And there's a woman by the name of Katrina Warren. She's a vet, and she's written a few books about animals. And she was asked a question, is it possible for dogs to understand a range of vocabulary similar to that of a 2-year-old child? Can they understand words? Well, having been a dog owner for a number of years, I would say absolutely. They read not just your body language, but they understand certain words. And they will understand that. And there's amazing talents that dogs have. When you have your Australian sheepdogs, they've been tested and they'll understand so many words. They are so intelligent. Well, I want you to know, I did an interview with a woman who actually taught dogs to read words and they would understand what you were saying. She had a school in San Francisco, and she did this. She trained dogs, and she said, it is real. They understand a lot more than what we give them credit for. And I think that that is so very, very, very true. So very, very true. And it really is amazing to me how animals, and I'll include cats, birds, ferrets, I mean, just all kinds of creatures that will readily read human beings, and crows. Lots of times people just thought that these were not birds that were very intelligent. Well, now, from studies that were done at the University of Washington, they find out they most definitely are intelligent. In fact, they have since proven in various experiments that they have done that if you're nasty to a crow, or if you're nice, it doesn't make any difference. They remember who you are. They know who you are. They recognize you. And they found that the crows, if anybody had done something that was not so nice to them, they'd actually follow you. And the babies that they had would remember you as well. Mm-hmm. It was an imprinting that was passed along genetically. Absolutely amazing. Also, what I wanted to share with you is some information that I came across this past weekend when I was wandering through various environments on the internet. And it was a company called 2-Bit Da Vinci. 2-Bit Da Vinci. Yes, just like the famous Leonardo Da Vinci. And it's called AduroClean Technologies. Now, this is a Canadian company. And do you know this company has been doing research for a number of years? And they have actually gotten 8 patents on how to process plastics. And I know we're not going to have enough time for me right now to share this with you, but I wanted to give you the inside information, if nothing else, to let you know that there are people out there that already have come up with solutions to deal with the various challenges that we've got today. Everything from conserving water to developing areas that have been stripped clean of trees and gardens and all, everything else. There is an azalea garden, for example, in China that people go in. They have thousands and thousands of people when spring comes around. It's called an azalea forest. And it was started by a community that was having some challenges. Their industry that had kept them healthy for so many generations disappeared. And they started developing this. And now they have a tourist industry that supports the community. But it's developed into all kinds of sideline businesses. Absolutely amazing. Yes, just it's incredible what human beings can come up with. So if you're feeling a little discouraged about life, start researching and be aware. There's a lot of good people out there doing a lot of good things. Maybe we don't hear about them because they're so busy being busy and contributing in a very special way. They're just doing what people often say, oh, everything is bad. Everything is bad. No, it isn't. It takes industriousness, inventiveness, and the patience and diligence to be able to work through the challenges. Donna Sebo here. I'm so glad you joined me. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I'll be with you tomorrow, same time, same place. And we are going to be talking about Everywhere I Look. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.